quite clear what the Stalinists did later on with Trotsky in trying to say that Trotsky, with his permanent revolution, was an anti-Leninist. In actual fact, Lenin of the April Thesis is the real Lenin of the revolution. The difference between Lenin and the old Bolsheviks was this. Lenin had developed the theory of the democratic dictatorship, the proletariat and peasantry, but he was a genuine Marxist who does not impose on the objective situation preconceived prejudices or old formulas that you have in your head. You look at the concrete situation on the ground and act accordingly. And Lenin very quickly changed his position once the revolution took off. He said, look, it's superseded. The real situation is all power to the Soviets, is what he was demanding. Now, there are tendencies that have tried to revise Trotsky. So the Stalinists have always attacked Trotsky for being anti-Leninist, but there are groups, even starting originally from a Trotsky's position, have tried to counterpose Lenin to Trotsky and saying, well, Lenin wasn't for the permanent revolution, Lenin was for stages, and he never accepted the permanent revolution. And it's actually surreptitiously reintroducing Stalinism and Menshevism into the revolutionary movement. because in reality, in 1917, Lenin and Trotsky came together as one. All the previous polemics that had been between them and, I mean, within the socialist movement, there's all kinds of polemics on it, different issues, but they reached the same conclusions. Although they weren't together, they were in different places in exile. They reached the conclusion the working class in Russia must take power. I'll give you an example of a group. It's called the Democratic Socialist Party of in Australia, who used to be Trotskyists about 30 years ago. Well, even then, they probably dubious whether they were. But they try to introduce the idea that Lenin did not call for nationalisation, did not expropriate the capitalist class. There was a stage. Of course, they did it in 1918. So even if you accept their idea, the distance between the two stages, the Socialist Revolution in October 1917 and the expropriation, the nationalisation, came about 6 months later at the most. It's not really a justification for the stages theory, but even they, when they quote Lenin, and they quote Lenin, a pamphlet by Lenin in 1918, and this is what they quote from Lenin: to attempt to raise an artificial Chinese wall between the first and second stages, to separate them by anything else than the degree of preparedness of the proletariat and the degree of its unity with poor peasants, means to distort Marxism dreadfully, to vulgarize it, to substitute liberalism in its place. And this is actually a quote within a quote, which is used to portray Lenin as saying there was two stages that were separated from each other. Lenin is very, very clear. There's no such Chinese wall separating the two. It is a disservice that is done to the revolutionary movement, because Stalinism has lost the authority that it had after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, if we go back to the 30s when Trotsky wrote his book on the revolution betrayed, the Stalinists attacked Trotsky for being a traitor, for daring to insinuate that the leaders of the glorious Communist Party of Russia could in any way, in any return to capitalism. It was presented as a terrible, terrible thing on the part of Trotsky. Well, 1991 proved, with some delay, that Trotsky was absolutely right. Putin and all the others used to carry a Communist Party card not so long ago, and would have proclaimed themselves as communists. Those very Stalinist bureaucrats have governed over the transition to capitalism and the re-establishment of capitalism, which is exactly what Trotsky predicted. Now, the collapse of Stalinism with it brings also a questioning of all the ideas of Stalinism. And it's incredible to see groups that claim to be revolutionary bringing Stalinism back through the back door. Fundamentally, it's the stages theory which has played such a pernicious role, by trying to find in Lenin, nonetheless, quotes taken out of context or words here and there to try and portray Lenin as a two-stagist, as against the permanent revolution. The theory of stages, we define it as Stalinist, but it's also a Menshevik theory, because it's basically going back, it's basically rubbing out the whole of the Russian Revolution experience, all the theoretical discussions, it's throwing out the April thesis in the rubbish bin, and all the writings of Lenin subsequently, and saying, basically, we have to go back to what the Mensheviks said in February 1917. Bourgeois democratic revolution, full stop. The socialist revolution will come at some long distant future. But the point is, what all these groups ignore is this, and they apply it, you see, they apply it to Venezuela. What their advice to Chavez, incredibly, is, you shouldn't nationalize the economy, because that's leaping stages. You see, they try and impose on Venezuela their preconceived views. Basically, they do what Lenin accused the old Bolsheviks of doing. You developed an idea, you impose it on a reality. And they tell Chavez that he shouldn't nationalize, but what he should do is, there's a long period of time to wait before you move on to that. What they ignore is this. The key question about October 1917 wasn't nationalization. That wasn't the essential aspect of that revolution. The essential aspect was the working class took power. They smashed the bourgeois state and established the power of the Soviets. The working class, through its elected organs, came to power, built their own state. That was the key thing. Once you have established workers' power and a workers' state, then you can discuss the tempo of the tempo of development, how fast you move down a certain road of certain you know of your program within the international context, but the key thing that you have power in your hands. In Venezuela, the situation is the bourgeois state is still there. The workers do not have state power. And so the question that's posed in Venezuela is not, I mean, nationalization is obviously a key demand, but more, even more important than that is, who holds the state power? And it's true, the bourgeoisie still holds the state power. To tell Chavez and the Bolivarian movement to hold back in these conditions is preparing betrayal. Now, yeah, this is repeating of the same kind of thing by Lenin. I'll skip over that because of time. I'll quote that as well. Now, the old Bolsheviks, as I said, criticised Lenin because of this, but Lenin threw it back. Kamenev was attacking Lenin, saying, this is what Kamenev said about Lenin: "As for Comrade Lenin's general scheme, it appears to us unacceptable, inasmuch as it proceeds from the assumption, that the bourgeois democratic revolution is completed," and he emphasized completed, "and builds on the immediate transformation of this revolution into a socialist revolution." This criticism of Kamenev of Lenin, he later threw it at Trotsky for over a decade, attacking Trotsky for this. He was attacking Trotsky for saying what Lenin was saying. And he attacked Lenin for the same idea. This is what it's just more and more of the same stuff when he talks about the old formula being no good, dead, and it's no use trying to revive it. This is constantly throughout the whole of the April thesis. Now, as I said before, the only kind of stage that Lenin envisaged was the one where the working class was not sufficiently conscious to take power. Not that it shouldn't take power. This is the DSP says, you shouldn't do this. Whereas Lenin said, you should take the power, but we haven't convinced you. We are a minority. We're the Revolutionary Party. We're going to patiently explain to you what needs to be done. What needs to be done is take the power. And therefore, it was patiently explained. It was not seen as a necessary phase between two stages of years with years of capitalist development. On the provisional government, which for decades later the Stalinists, whenever a similar kind of government came into existence, like you know the Spanish Popular Front or or other situations, they gave support to these fronts on the basis that these were the forces that would carry out the bourgeois democratic revolution in Spain or in France or in China. The communists therefore should ally themselves and support. Lenin, on the government that existed in Russia in 1917, said, after listing a whole series of reasons, "For all these reasons, the new bourgeois government does not deserve the confidence of the proletariat, even in the sphere of internal policy, and no support of this government brought by the proletariat is admissible." That's crystal clear, the position of Lenin on the provisional government. And referring to this government, he said, "The new government has already begun to hinder in every way the revolutionary initiative of mass action and the seizure of power by the people from below, which is the sole guarantee of the real success of the revolution." So no support for the provisional government, and take the power. Now, yeah, I can't read my own handwriting. Yes. Why did the Stalinists revert to the old Menshevik theory of basically two stages? And Trotsky explains it. It's connected to the degeneration of the revolution. The isolation. I mean, this is a separate discussion. I don't want to discuss the question of degeneration, the Stalinism, etc. But the degeneration of the revolution was due to the isolation of the Soviet Union, a backward economy surrounded by a capitalist world. The perspectives of the Bolsheviks had been, we take power in Russia, but we cannot consolidate power and build socialism just in Russia. We need the help of the proletariat of Germany, of Britain, and other countries. In that sense, the idea of socialism, a socialist revolution was a necessity in Russia, but socialism can only be built as part of a world system in which the advanced capitalist countries would have moved over to socialism. The revolution, having been betrayed in one country after another, led to the isolation of Russia, and on that basis, the crystallization of a bureaucracy, a privileged bureaucracy, within the Soviet Union. Once that privileged bureaucracy had positioned itself in power, trust me, they wanted to reap the benefits. They wanted to enjoy life. They wanted to live their privileges as a bureaucratic caste at the top of the worker state, and thereby deforming it. And they declared, in about 1924, Stalin immediately, he discovered suddenly, a few months earlier he was talking about Leninism and internationalism, and suddenly discovered that socialism in one country is possible. What he meant was, we can build up the economy under this system, where we are sitting at the helm as a privileged bureaucracy, and this bureaucracy had a conservative outlook, and had no wish to see the workers coming to power in Germany, because if the workers in Germany had come to power, and a revolution had taken power in other advanced countries, it would have been the end of the bureaucracy in the Soviet Union, because the workers of Russia would no longer be isolated. They could get the advanced technology, the specialized technicians, economists, etc., who could help to build up the Soviet economy under genuine workers' control. In isolation, the tiny elite who had a monopoly of culture used that for their own privileges, and therefore they became consciously against the revolution in other countries. And that's why they reverted to the theory of two stages. The theory of two stages was used in China in 1925-27. They told the Communist Party not just to ally themselves with the Kuomintang, but to enter it and accept its discipline. What was the theory? The Kuomintang represented the progressive Chinese bourgeoisie, which was carrying out the Chinese bourgeois revolution. We know how the Kuomintang thanked the communists for this. You know how they killed the communists in 1927. They threw them alive into the fires of fire engines, the boilers of the trains. This is recounted in Andre Malraux's book on the Shanghai situation. They literally opened the hatches and threw them in alive. This was the progressive Chiang Kai-shek leading the bourgeois democratic revolution. But the theory served to hold back the Chinese communists from applying the same tactics as the Russians. If the Chinese communists had applied the ideas of Lenin in 1917 to China, they would have had an independent policy, no confidence in Chiang Kai-shek, and they would have built up the forces of the Chinese working class. And the excuse of the Stalinists, China's a backward country. But the question is, what was Russia in 1917? It was equally a backward country. The same conditions existed, and the same revolution could have taken place. They applied it again in 1936 in Spain. On that basis, the Stalinists gave support to the Republican government. And Trotsky explained, the Republican government defended the interests of the bourgeois. There was no such thing as a progressive bourgeoisie in that epoch. And it was used, the denial of the permanent revolution as a theory and the insistence on the two stages was used over and over again to betray the working class in one revolution after another. It's played a pernicious role. Now, to get to Trotsky's theory, there's a critique of the Menshevik position, obviously, and on this Lenin agreed, as we've seen. He didn't refer to the bourgeois revolution carried out by the bourgeoisie. Lenin understood that the bourgeoisie wasn't going to do it. That's why he said it was the proletariat and the peasantry that had to do it. On this, Lenin agreed in the polemic against the Mensheviks. But as I said, Trotsky saw the question of the role of the proletariat. That would play the leading role in the revolution, in alliance with the peasants in a backward country, obviously pulling them behind them and developing a program aimed also at the peasantry. That's why the Bolsheviks posed the question of the land, which is a task of the bourgeois revolution. But it wasn't the Russian bourgeoisie that was carrying it out, it was the Russian proletariat that was carrying it out. The Mensheviks said, the conditions for socialism don't exist in Russia. They had the very mechanical outlook. The borders of Russia is backward. This is like England, 1640. So in Russia, our support the Russian bourgeoisie. What the progressive step is the development of capitalism. Trotsky replied, you need to look at the whole world economy. It's not made up of separate units. Each one is part of a whole. And where's my plan of revolution? Right. Yes, he starts off from the tasks of the democratic revolution. And he says in Russia they've not been carried out. They are yet to be carried out. And he said these fall to the proletariat. Because the bourgeoisie is incapable of carrying out its own revolution, then the proletariat, which is already on the scene, has to take on board these tasks. But, he explained, because of the nature of the proletariat, and it was already a much more developed proletariat than, say, the English one, the proletariat would tend to move beyond bourgeois tasks and towards the socialist tasks. And therefore, while carrying out the bourgeois revolution in the sense of removing the land of the aristocracy, the land of the peasantry and all the rest of it, abolishing all the old feudal relics and establishing a modern state, in the cities, because of the advanced nature of the working class and this advanced industry, the workers would tend to expropriate the factories and take them over. And in that sense, that's an element of the permanent nature, in the sense that it doesn't stop at the bourgeois, it moves in a permanent process from one to the other without going through stages. And then it continues to move from the national level, because Trotsky explains that the revolution in one country cannot succeed in establishing socialism. The working class moving from the bourgeois to the socialist tasks, and the socialist revolution within the borders of a country then moves to the international scene, and the revolution spreads from one country to another. In that sense, the Bolsheviks actually considered that although Russia in political terms was much more advanced in the fact that the working class took power, because it was economically much more backward, once the revolution spread to countries like Germany, France and Britain, Russia would revert to being a backward country within the context of a world socialist federation, because they'd have a much more backward economy. But that's how Trotsky envisaged it. And in that he said, in this context, it was pointless talking about countries that were mature and countries that were immature. And in the minds of the Mensheviks, England was mature for socialism. France was, Germany was, but not Russia. And therefore, you know, the workers in England can work for socialist revolution. We've got to work for bourgeois revolution. Now, to say that in Russia the country wasn't mature for socialism meant tying it under the yoke of imperialism. It meant you couldn't carry out the bourgeois revolution. They did not understand the contradictions. Now, if we apply it to Venezuela today, you see the Pervin Revolution in action. We can only understand Venezuela if you understand the Pervin Revolution, because Chavez started off as a genuine bourgeois democrat, or bourgeois nationalist. His idea was, we carry out reforms and we basically transform Venezuela into a modern country, developing industry, spreading democracy, a genuine democratic parliament. And probably his model was Western Europe, the United States. As Castro's model before he came to power was actually the United States itself. We want democracy like in the United States. We want healthcare, we want education, we want to raise the cultural level of the people, a modern bourgeois state. In attempting to carry it out, it's proved in a negative sense the theory of the permanent revolution. The oligarchy in Venezuela is an obstacle to actually completing the bourgeois democratic revolution of Venezuela, because they are tied with 100 strings to US imperialism on the one hand, and on the land question hasn't been solved in Venezuela, and many of the oligarchy that have interests in industry also own the land. In that sense, there's a certain similarity. The big difference is that in Venezuela, the proletariat is much, much stronger than it was in Russia in 1917. And therefore, if we want to see which ideas from Russian Revolution apply to Venezuela, is it the idea of the Mensheviks, or of the Stalinists later on, or is it the ideas of Lenin and Trotsky? It's quite clear, with the working class being so much stronger, that it's the ideas of the Bolsheviks that apply. And what Chavez needs to do is smash the bourgeois state, build a workers' state, nationalise the economy under workers' control. Now, he himself, you can see the way he's moved. He started off by trying to carry out some reforms. What was the reaction of the oligarchy? It wasn't to say, oh yes, this man represents us. He is a genuine representative of the bourgeois democratic revolution, which is what he should be. If you think in a mechanical way, he represents bourgeois democracy, and therefore the bourgeoisie should support him. The oligarchy tried to carry a coup to stop him from carrying out his reforms. In the process, he himself has actually said he believed in a third way, but he's learnt from his experience from the coup and subsequent events that a third way doesn't exist. And he's developed, you know, talking about socialism of the 21st century. He even has read The Permanent Revolution of Trotsky, and I don't think he's fully understood it. What he has understood of the Permanent Revolution is that it has to be international. That is an important thing that he's understood, that it can't be within the confines of one country. What he hasn't fully understood is the fact that you've got to move and expropriate the capitalists and smash the state. But he's moving more and more to the left. And the reason for it is the objective situation will push a genuine bourgeois democrat in that direction. Because either he goes in that direction, i.e. he moves towards socialism, or he has to move back towards reaction. There is no other way. It confirms, to defend the bourgeois democratic demands, you've got to carry out a socialist revolution. You cannot defend the bourgeois democratic demands within the confines of capitalism in Venezuela. In a certain sense, if you go back in history, Mao, if you read Ted's articles on Mao, 1948, before he even came to power, Mao Tse-tung's perspectives in 1948 were precisely the theory of two stages. And he actually said 100 years of capitalism. He had it very clear. And if you look at the first things they did in China after 1949, they dealt with the land question. They didn't attack the capitalists straight away. Mao was looking desperately for a national Chinese bourgeoisie, a progressive, industrial, modern bourgeoisie that could play a role within the new regime. The problem was, as Ted said in a polemic with somebody, he says he would have liked to have an alliance through the bourgeoisie. The problem is he couldn't catch them because they were running. In the war that they fought, they escaped across the sea to Taiwan, and the Kuomintang and the whole gang of them went over there, and they were left with state power in their hands, no bourgeoisie with which to have an alliance. The economy had to function, and he ended up having to nationalise the means of production. It was a distorted version of the permanent revolution. Mao actually did not act on his own perspectives. His perspectives would have been bourgeois democracy in China after 1949. Instead, you ended up with a nationalised planned economy. Any political force on the left today that denies the theory of the permanent revolution and thereby introduces the idea of the two stages is forced to look for a so-called progressive bourgeoisie. And how many times have we seen revolutions erupt where mass movement overthrows, let's say, a military dictatorship or a brutal 40, 50-year dictatorship? The workers come onto the scene, revolutionary situation exists. If the workers had a leadership, they could do what Lenin said in 1917, take the power. Instead, their leaders, sometimes they're called communists, sometimes they're called other names, fundamentally Stalinist in their outlook, hold the workers back from going beyond that line and find the democrat of the moment. In the Philippines, what was her name? Aquino was such a person. And we've had them in Indonesia too. So-called bourgeois democrats. In Italy in 1944, they even had the illusion that Marshal Badoglio, who was a military man of the fascist regime, was such an individual that you could have an alliance with. Always looking for the progressive bourgeoisie to support. And there is no such thing as a progressive bourgeoisie in the modern epoch. Objectively speaking, it can't exist. You have an imperialist bourgeoisie that dominates the world. And in the colonial and ex-colonial countries, you have a comprador bourgeoisie, which is in alliance with the imperialist bourgeoisie. I've yet to find these progressive bourgeois democrats who are prepared to form an alliance with the working class to smash the old state. The bourgeoisie always lines up against the workers. These so-called democrats only present themselves as democrats to fool the working class and allow the Stalinists to do this. And invariably what you see is the workers are pulled back. It either leads directly to a defeat, such as in Chile 1973 with a coup and the working class is smashed, or it leads to a period of so-called democracy. I suppose Ted would have called it the counter-revolution in democratic form, where the workers are held back, they're stopped from taking power, the economic levers of power remain in the hands of the bourgeoisie, the bourgeois state remains intact, it changes its clothes from military dictatorship to some kind of democratic parliamentary setup, but the workers have been defeated, and capitalist policies continue, and there is no genuine movement towards reform on the part of the workers. And the only way the workers in these countries can complete and carry out their basic desires is by moving on to the socialist plan, which is socialist revolution. The theory of the permanent revolution, I think, is even more valid today than it was when it was first developed. And the conditions for socialist revolution are even more mature today than they were in 1917. If you look at the overwhelming majority of countries now in the world, have an urban population, a majority urban population. Latin America, most countries have about 80% of the population is urbanized. But even in countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, and other countries, you have this urban proletariat which exists. To talk today of stages is completely going out against history and reality. And, you know, the reading I would suggest the comrades have is obviously The Theory of the Permanent Revolution itself by Trotsky, and read it combined with the April Thesis of Lenin, because the Stalinists do try, they try and use the authority of Lenin and the Bolshevik Party to justify what are basically rehashed ideas from the Mensheviks and earlier. And I'll leave it there.